Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
By this time, the two combatants were at the edge feet of swords. Then Ferdiad caught Cuchulainn unguarded and dealt him a blow with his ivory-hilted blade, which he plunged into Cuchulainn's breast. And Cuchulainn's blood dripped into his belt, and the ford was red with the blood from the warrior's body. Cuchulainn brooked not this wounding, for Ferdiad attacked him with a succession of deadly stout blows, and he asked Lug for Gai Bolga. Such was the nature of the Gai Bolga. It used to be set downstream and cast from between the toes. It made a one wound as it entered a man's body, but it had 30 barbs when one tried to remove it, and it was not taken from a man's body until the flesh was cut away about it.
And when Ferdiad heard mention of the Gai Bolga, he thrust down the shield to shelter the lower part of his body. Cuchulainn cast the fine spear from off the palm of his hand over the rim of the shield and over the breast piece of the horn skin so that its farther half was visible after it had pierced Ferdiad's heart in his breast. Ferdiad thrust up the shield to protect the upper part of his body, but that was help that came too late. The charioteer sent the Gai Bolga downstream. Cuchulainn caught it between his toes and made a cast of it at Ferdiad. And the Gai Bolga went through the strong, thick apron of smelted iron and broke in three the great stone as big as a millstone and entered Ferdiad's body through the anus and filled every joint and limb of him with its barbs.
"That suffices now," said Ferdiad. "I have fallen by that cast, but indeed strongly do you cast from your right foot, and it was not fitting that I should fall by you."
And as he spoke, he uttered these words.
"O hound of the fair feats, it was not fitting that you should slay me. Yours is the guilt which clung to me. On you my blood was shed. Doomed men who reach the gap of betrayal do not flourish. Sad is my voice. Alas, heroes have been destroyed. My ribs, like spoils, are broken. My heart is gore. Would that I had not fought. I have fallen, O hound."
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And that opening reading was from the Cecile O'Rahilly translation of, and I'm going to do my best, the Tyne Bo Cullung. We're going to be obviously talking about Irish mythology today, and unfortunately that means we're going to be trying to pronounce a lot of words and probably sometimes failing. Please bear with us, but it's done out of love and we do our best.
That's right, and it feels good to come back around to some Irish mythology here, because Irish myth is rich with fantastic ideas, magical beings, monsters, and in this case, a very interesting magical weapon that is really unlike anything else I've read about.
Robert, you have been on such a kick of magical weapons these days. You're big into Cupid's leaden arrows. We did the trident. I'm down with it. This is fun.
Oh, yeah. We also have the older episode about various spinning weapons of death that I did with Christian.
But even after all those, the episode today about Guy Bolga, the spear of the hero Cuchulainn, I think this takes the cake. This is the weirdest, best magical weapon with biological connections that we have discussed yet. I am pretty certain of it.
Yeah. In fact, it's going to be maybe a fun exercise for listeners to try and predict where we're going to land biologically at the end of this episode to get into the science of the Guy Bolga.
Now, Robert, I admit before we did this episode, I had no idea who Cuchulainn was, and I probably would have pronounced it like Cuchulainn or whatever. This is a hero of Irish mythology who I had never even heard of before.
Yeah, I think I'd run across some mention of him in passing, but I don't think I'd ever actually read any of the tales about him or even the poems about him. I mean, there's a Yeats poem, Cuchulainn Comforted. So he's not an obscure character in Irish myth by any stretch of the imagination.
But Cuchulainn is so cool. How could I have not heard about this? I feel like the people who study Irish mythology have got to get in touch with Hollywood or something, get some movies going so people know these myths better.
Well, yeah, he's quite a figure. So Cuchulainn is a mythological hero that has been described as the Irish Achilles,
okay,
or even the Irish Incredible Hulk.
That's maybe a little closer.
Yeah, and if you can probably already get a sense here, we're talking about yet another mythological killing machine, an ancient soldier, streaked in gore and honor. So in many respects, he is what you expect from a mythological hero. You know, he's a mighty warrior. He has a sense of nobility, and he's sort of pushed into tragic circumstances.
Yeah, he's tough. He's brave. He's brutal. He meets a tragic end.
Right. Now, he's a central character in the Ulster Cycle, one of the four great cycles of medieval Irish myth. And this cycle takes place in the first century CE and was written in Old and Middle Irish. He also appears to factor into certain Scottish traditions as well.
Okay.
But largely Irish.
So let's do the life story of Cuchulainn.
So he wasn't born Cuchulainn. He was born Setanta.
Setanta's his given name. Cuchulainn's more like Kal-El becomes Superman.
Right. So he's the nephew of the Irish king, King Conor. And he's the offspring of the union between Conor's sister and the god Lug. Lug was mentioned in that dramatic reading earlier. Lug is a member of the Tuatha De Danann, the sort of spiritual god elf beings of Irish myth.
Okay.
So like as with the likes of say Achilles and Hercules, we have a hybrid on our hands here, part human, part divine.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly looked like a half divine creature. He has some unnatural aspects to his appearance that definitely line up with what you might expect from a demigod.
What, like maybe a few too many of certain body parts?
Yes. For starters, he's just unnaturally beautiful. He's a paragon of masculine beauty and strength.
Okay.
And then he has seven fingers on each hand, seven toes on each foot, and then seven pupils in each eye.
Seven pupils in each eye. Well, that sounds like a paragon of beauty.
Now, even as a child, his exploits made him famous. And then King Conor himself ends up bestowing the new name on him, Cuchulainn, after he kills the great guard dog, the Hound of Holland, Holland being a Smith here with his bare hands at a banquet. And so he has to take on this new name as a penance.
Yeah, like after he kills the Smith's hound, he, I think, offers to serve himself as the guard of the Smith's forge.
Yeah. And so now he is Cuchulainn. And then, you know, at the end of that dramatic reading, you know, he's referred to as the Hound.
So I'm thinking because he's this paragon of masculine beauty and strength, there's got to be like a trend-setting kind of thing that people just can't match, right? So it's the same way that after you have a famous movie star who starts wearing a certain kind of hairstyle or something, now that's what's cool and everybody wants to do it. In this case, in first century Ireland, everybody would want to have seven pupils in each eye. And so that's what everybody's going to the local witches about. It's not like, you know, make me live forever, give me huge strength. It's give me seven pupils in each eye.
Now, of course, as always, when we're talking about mythology, it's worth noting that you know, there are varying sources, there are varying tellings, and some of the details are going to change with the telling and the time.
Yeah, they're definitely very radically different accounts of Cuchulainn.
Now, but so we've arrived at this version of Cuchulainn. Already, he is a beautiful, powerful warrior with some unnatural characteristics. But then he also has an additional superpower.
But wait, there's more.
Yes. So he can essentially Hulk out is the thing. He can enter into a berserker state during battle. But it's not just like a mental state. Like it actually is said to twist and deform his body as he becomes this just unreasonable killing machine.
Yeah, the Riestrad is this process.
Yeah, and apparently Thomas Kinsella translated this state as the, quote, warp spasm.
That sounds like something straight out of the X-Men.
Yeah, it sounds rather chaotic. I definitely don't want to be around a warrior when they're entering the warp spasm. It sounds rather dangerous.
All right, well, we've got another quote from the Cecile O'Rahilly translation of the Tainbo Cuchulainn from the Book of Leinster, and this is about what happens in the warp spasm. Quote, "Then occurred Cuchulainn's first distortion. He swelled and grew big as a bladder does when inflated and became a fearsome, terrible, many-colored, strange arch, and the valiant hero towered above Ferdiad as big as a fomar or a pirate." And I think the fomar, you were saying, Robert, that that's like a giant of Irish mythology.
Yeah, it's like a giant ogre-type being from Irish myth.
So like the Irish version of Jotunheim might be full of these.
Yeah, yeah. So clearly, Cuchulainn is nobody to mess with. Like this is a terrifying force on the battlefield.
Why does the author of this work though believe that pirates are gigantic?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm less sure on that one. So Cuchulainn fights bravely throughout his military career. Mm-hmm. He fights off the forces of Queen Maeve at the age of 17, I believe virtually like single-handedly, like he's that powerful a warrior. Mm-hmm. But he's eventually tricked by warriors in the employ of Maeve and slain at the age of 27. So not a long life, but then again, you know, you're an Irish warrior during the first century. There's not a long life expectancy there.
Now, they kind of have to employ some trickery in order to overcome his strength, which I think is a common feature in like mythic hero cycles. You see that with like Samson in Jewish legend. And you sort of see a version of it with Achilles, with like them finding out his one weakness.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, there's basically like a three-part plan that has to be employed here. I mean, the first one being key, they trick him into eating dog meat, which breaks a taboo and weakens his spirit.
Yeah, I read somewhere that this came about by pitting two taboos against each other. Like there's a taboo against refusing hospitality on one hand, mm-hmm. but there's also a taboo against eating dog meat. So what if somebody shows you hospitality by offering you dog meat?
Oh, you're caught.
Yeah, you're caught. You're there. That's, you know, it's Scylla and Charybdis. So he had to pick, and he picked not refusing hospitality, but he ate the dog meat, and that screwed him up.
Now, the next thing that helps if you're trying to take out a half-divine warrior is to have a divine weapon of your own, a magical weapon of your own, mm-hmm. that will help you slay them. And so that's what the trio do here. They hit him with a magical disemboweling spear that is enchanted to kill kings. They apparently had three of these, and they used two on his accomplices, including the charioteer, who mm-hmm. was like the king of chariots, which seems kind of like a loophole in the whole king thing. Like you don't have to actually be a king. You're just kind of quote-unquote, a king of something.
But Cuchulainn has, like, a really bad dude moment here. Like, he gets hit with the spear, but he's like, I'm not going down that easy.
Yeah, he's not going to die like that. He is going to die standing up, fighting. So he, like, tucks his innards back into his body and then, like stumbles over to a pillar, lashes himself to the pillar so that he can fight and die standing up.
Right.
Like, they're going to have to come and take him on his feet.
But, okay, so he's tied there dying, and they got to be afraid, right? Because Cuchulainn is this killing machine, mm-hmm. even dying cut open with a kill spear tied to a rock or a pillar. He's going to be scary, so they don't want to get too close. And I think one source says that they had to wait until a bird landed on him
yes.
in order to know that he had actually died.
Yeah, and then they move in. What do? You cut off his head, to be sure. But when they cut off his head, there's this brilliant light that cuts off one of the attacker's sword hands, I believe. And then it's not until they cut off Cuchulainn's sword arm that the light dies away and that he's definitely dead. So it's like you don't have – it's one thing to cut away the seed of reason from this mighty war. You also have to cut away like the physical sword hand of the warrior. There's a wonderful, like, full telling of this final battle. One in particular that I liked came from Lady Augusta Gregory, Cuchulainn of Murathimni from 1902. That's all online. I recommend checking that out if you want the full blow-by-blow death of Cuchulainn.
So how do we not have a full Cuchulainn movie?
Yeah, it seems like we should. I mean, how many Hercules movies do we have, right? Way too many. We could easily peel off some of that money into the Cuchulainn enterprise here.
Yeah. Now, we were talking before the episode about who to cast as Cuchulainn. We could not come up with a good idea because all of the best Irish actors we were thinking of to cast as this Irish hero are now old. I was like,
yeah.
But like Pierce Brosnan, yeah.
Yeah.
Pierce is right there in his name.
Yeah, but sadly, like we said, he died at 27. You need a young, like powerful and imposing Irishman who is also a really good actor.
Yeah, I think some of my favorite Irish actors, let's see, there's Brendan Gleeson. I guess he's older now. There's mm-hmm. I love Liam Cunningham, the guy who plays Ser Davos on Game of Thrones. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know who the young guy is.
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody I can think of is too old. Like even people, you know, there's a thinking. Well, maybe a professional wrestler, right? Get a big muscle bound dude to play Cuchulainn.
Okay.
There's a guy named Seamus. Who's like a big, pale Irish wrestler. But he's too old for the part. Maybe he could play the hulked out version of Cuchulainn. You could do kind of a, you know, like the Incredible Hulk TV show where you had Lou Ferrigno playing the actual Hulk.
Oh, no, wait. This is giving me a great idea. Actually, like the main normal Cuchulainn, before he hulks out, he should be like super waify, like a very, very waify, boyish, like teen heartthrob kind of Irish actor. And then when he hulks out, he gets replaced by the bodybuilder.
Okay, I like this. So we'll, maybe our Irish listeners especially will have some ideas about who could be cast in such a film.
Our Irish listeners also, I'm sure, are going to get in touch with us to let us know how badly we're saying all these words. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to get into the real meat of this episode. We're going to talk about the unnatural death weapon of Cuchulainn. We're going to talk about the Guy Bolga. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back. So every hero needs a mighty weapon.
Uh-huh.
And Koholan certainly had one in the Guy Bolga, like a weapon so mighty that it is the death weapon of last resort. He only even turns to it if he's basically fighting an opponent that is on his own level.
Now, it is not known exactly how to translate the term Guy Bolga, right? It's translated many different ways. I think we know that Guy basically means spear, right? But the Bolga, there's questions about what that means.
Yeah, that's correct. Guy certainly means spear or dart, but the Bolga part is open to some discussion. There's a particular text that we turn to by a writer by the name of Edward Pettit. I am not going to give you the full name of that article because it'll give away what we're going to get to in the later portions of this episode.
We will say the name of the article later.
We will say it later. But he points out that the Guy Bolga has been translated as – just here's a sampling. The belly dart, the dart of belly, barbed spear, spear of bellows, body spear, bagged spear, spear of swelling, the spear of the sack – forked spear, gapped spear, solar spear, the spear of mortal pain, the eagle spear, spear of the lightning god, spear of the thunderbolt. And he also adds that the Bolga part has also been interpreted to perhaps refer to an inflated bladder so essentially this would be a fishing spear like one would have tethered to something that floats.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then likewise, it's also been potentially connected to the fear bolg. These, according to Carol Rose, the folklorist that I often refer to when we're talking about mythological creatures and monsters, she says that these were the mythic first inhabitants of Ireland, defeated by the Tuatha De Danann and driven into mountain caves and forests where they became loathsome monsters. So possible connection there as well.
But okay, whatever Bulga means there, bellows, bulge, whatever, we know that this is some kind of special magic spear. So how does it work? What does it do?
Well, one of the things is that Cuchulainn alone knows how to really wield the weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he is taught, depends on which version you're reading, he's either taught by a god or by, a skilled master, and he alone has mastery of the Gai Bulga. But it is, again, it is a spear, a weapon that you only turn to as like basically just a last resort. And also if you're just really willing to absolutely murder your opponent.
I'm sorry. I'm just suddenly reminded of one of those newspaper articles from the 1920s that we quoted in our Death Ray episode of mm-hmm. Invention, where the guy was like, the Death Ray is mine and only I can have it.
Yeah, this was his Death Ray in a sense. Now, in that fantastic reading at the top of the episode, that story from the cattle raid of Kulang, that really gives you some of the key attributes of the weapon here. So it is brought to Cuchulainn via a stream. His charioteer puts it in a stream and it floats down to him. And then it is cast by the foot. So he picks it up with his seven-toed foot and casts it thusly.
Aims it with his seven-peopled eye.
Right. And then also in that telling, we see that it pierces his opponent through the anus, which is not a detail that is present in every telling of this story, but it is there. And part of it has to do with the fact that these are two, former friends, they're still friends, but they're battling each other. And they each have sort of magical abilities, So Cuchulainn alone has the mastery of this fabulous barbed weapon, and then his opponent has this horn skin that protects most of his body, mm-hmm. but not the anus.
So you might say that Ferdiad has an Achilles heel, and it is his anus. It's
yes.
his Achilles anus. So maybe instead of saying Achilles heel from now on, we should substitute Ferdiad's anus.
It's going to be challenging to drop that into just casual conversation.
I'm going to darn well try, Robert, for the rest of my life for Diad Zanus.
All right. So that Edward Pettit article that we mentioned earlier, and I believe this is Edward G. Pettit from LaSalle University, who's apparently something of an Edgar Allan Poe expert and a monster expert, I'm reading, teaches classes on vampire literature and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But he drives home that there are several key attributes that are generally consistent in the various tellings here. So first of all, only Cuchulainn can wield the Gai Bulga here. He alone was taught its martial art, and the teacher varies from a mortal to a sea god.
Okay. Another thing he mentions is that it's sort of a single-use weapon, right?
Right.
Like you get one shot.
Now, that being said, I don't think he ever misses with the thing, or at least
right.
I have not read the story where he busts it out and misses.
Like accidentally hits, a nearby bird in the anus instead.
Right. Also, it's sometimes sent to him by water, such as in our opening story there. It travels down a stream to him.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't just appear in the context of water. He also – it's like thrown from below the water.
Yeah. So it's also – it is a fearsome weapon. So Ferdiad wore special armor in an attempt to protect himself from it. And, it's clearly when he sees that this weapon is coming out, mm-hmm. He takes notice. Like it's gotten dire.
It's not just a normal spear. It is something that is known to be very dangerous.
Right.
Just mechanically in its characteristics as a weapon, Pettit says that it is, quote, accurate, sharp, strong, and highly penetrative.
Yes, to say the least. It's also inescapable and deadly. And in later tellings, it's also said to be venomous and cursed with an incurable poison that fills the body.
Now, one really interesting feature about it is the idea that it is many barbed, but mm-hmm. At first it's cast as like a single spear that is straight and thin. But then once it pierces the body, it is said to spread out its barbs so that it has to be cut out in order to be removed. You can't just pull it out. And this would be kind of like the barbs on some existing spears, like fishing spears sometimes would have barbs like this in order to make sure that the thing stays on there once you stab it. But it's not just that it's barbed. It's that there's this idea that it sort of spreads out within the body. So like once you pierce somebody, the point and the barbs, it is said, spread to all of the veins or spread to all of the joints and limbs. I'm not quite sure exactly what it means there, except I'm sort of considering when – do you remember in our episode about mistletoe, the plant – you know, the plant parasite. It's a parasite on other plants, where we talked about the idea of the house storium. It's this base sort of root structure for mistletoe that grows on the surface of a tree or another plant and then pierces its stem and sometimes grows down and spreads out little filaments and root structures within the host plant. And we talked about how – so this is a parasite. It's not just like a vampire sticking its fangs into you, but as if it sticks its fangs in and sometimes the fangs like continue to grow out inside the body and fill all your blood vessels.
Yeah. I think this is a great reference because I definitely get that kind of like growing barbed root, like just rapid growth of barbs through the entire body, like a real – a true body horror weapon to employ here.
But another way to think about that is that's just sort of like it could be a mechanical metaphor for a chemical property. The idea that you stab something and it's got venom or poison or something on it, and even though you only stab the body in one place, the poison spreads out to all the blood.
Right. And yeah, so there's – you could make various interpretations of it for sure. It's often described as being white or bright in color. And of course, it's often drenched in blood in these tellings because it doesn't seem to miss. And when it hits, it's going to be gory.
Now, Pettit says it's also often associated with demons or fire or hell. It's sort of an infernal weapon.
Yeah, and even described as being used against actual demons in hell in later traditions, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And along those lines, it's also described as sometimes behaving in some ways like a bellows. So, again, anytime we're talking about say a magical weapon in mythology, you know, we're not so much talking about a single thing, but we're talking about a tradition of a thing,
right?
Various tellings of a thing, and different influences are going to become involved in sort of recolor exactly how it is described. Either way you shake it, it is a treacherous weapon.
Okay,
even for a mighty hero to employ. But then there's one final detail, a key detail here, and it has to do with where this weapon comes from. Because every great weapon that a mythical hero uses, it has to have an origin story, right?
Of course, and one of my favorite origin stories for a weapon or a piece of armor or something like that is something that's taken from the body of a monster.
Oh yeah,
like Hercules. You know, he makes his cloak out of the Nemean lion's hard to pierce skin.
And in this case, we have a weapon that is made from a sea monster, from the remains, from the bones of a sea monster. Now, it's described in some translations as being made from the skin of a monster from hell, but hell, Pettit says, could have been the depths of the ocean. And this is supported, he says, by later tales in which our hero Cuchulainn defeats barb-tailed beasts from the ocean.
Now, I think Pettit also talks about versions where it is said to come from the skull of something called like a dog head.
Yeah.
Which could be interpreted as some version of like shark or dogfish type creature, but also is in some way seen as a sea monster.
Right. So at this point in the episode, I'm going to tell you what the full title of his paper is. Cuchulainn's Guy Bolga, From Harpoon to Stingray Spear. That's the title. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into Pettit's stingray hypothesis.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back.
All right, so here's the part of the podcast where we play a game we often like to play, which is taking a story or an object from myth and wondering, like, could there be a natural world explanation for what inspired this myth or this image or this creature from mythology? And of course, this type of game, we always like to point out, does have a weakness. It has a Ferdiadzanus, you might say.
Yes, yes.
Which is that we don't want to overlook the fact that there's lots of creative imagination involved in mythology, and you don't always have to explain the contents of a myth by pointing to something that really happened in history or really exists in nature and saying that inspired it. We don't always know that that's what happened. Maybe sometimes that happened. Maybe sometimes it's people just using their imagination. But in any case, this can be a really interesting game to play because there is no doubt that at least in many cases, things in myths were inspired by stuff people saw in nature.
And Edward Pettit's hypothesis here is that this mighty weapon was the spine of a stingray, or at least at some point in its legacy, it is interpreted as such. Stories of stingray barbed weapons are employed then to describe this weapon that Cuchulainn wields.
Yeah, and this inspiration could go multiple ways if, in fact, there is such an element of this kind of inspiration in the stories. It could be that people saw a stingray spine in nature and this led to the original idea of the Guybulga spear. But it could also be that ideas about stingray spines colored later tellings of an existing mythical spear that was already in some stories. But let's see if there's anything to this idea and start by looking at what's a stingray. So a stingray is a type of ray, and rays are cartilaginous fish, cousins of sharks, this family of sharks and rays. They're called the elasmobranchs. They're fish with skeletons made of cartilage instead of bone. It's the same bendy stuff you've got in your ears. And the superorder of rays is Batoidea. Stingrays in particular are found in the suborder of rays known as Myliobatiformes. Now, like other rays, stingrays kind of have a flattened body and a large, somewhat rounded pectoral set of fins that are fully fused with the head and the body. And this makes them sort of rounded off like a pancake fish.
Mm-hmm.
Often stingrays tend to swim by sort of undulating their wide pectoral fins sort of just like waves rather than flapping like wings. And stingrays in particular tend to have flat bodies that blend in with the seafloor. Often they're camouflaged, and that's because they spend most of their time on the seafloor, hiding out, often partially buried in sediment. You'll sometimes see stingrays like down in the sediment with like sand piled on top of their little wings. And some researchers believe that their eyes are poorly placed for hunting, given that their body is this sort of flat disc shape, and their mouths are down on the bottom, and their eyes are up on the top. But that's okay because they don't need to rely entirely on their eyes for hunting. Like sharks, stingrays have organs that are known as the ampullae of Lorenzini, and these are small pores in the skin that can detect electric fields in the water. And of course, all animals generate electric fields in the water, especially when they contract their muscles. So if there is a prey animal out there swimming, moving around, or even just with a beating heart, you can probably sense some kind of electric voltage difference that it is causing in the water with your ampullae of Lorenzini. But they've also got a magnificent spine, and that's what we're going to be focusing on today. The stingray has a spine with venom, sometimes deadly venom, that can, in some cases, kill humans.
Now, to be clear, stingrays very rarely attack or kill humans.
Yes, they are not considered aggressive at all. Generally, if there's an incident between humans and stingrays, it's defensive because the human, like, stepped on the stingray or loomed over it.
Right, and the latter seems to have probably been the case with the most famous case in recent history of a stingray-related death, that of the crocodile hunter Steve Irwin.
Oh, yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, it was a tragic case. 2006. He died after he sustained numerous stabs from an 8-foot-wide stingray. He was in shallow water. He was in close proximity to the creature they were filming. And the theory I read is that the ray might have thought Irwin's shadow was a tiger shark in the shallow water there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it reportedly stabbed him hundreds of times. And one of the stabs pierced his heart, and then he bled to death.
Yeah, it's a sad story, but it's not the only time that people have actually been killed by stingray spines. They cause severe just direct trauma, like can pierce the skin and cause a lot of bleeding. But they also, in many cases, do have very powerful venom.
I think it is worth noting, like given especially that this case occurred in shallow water,
mm-hmm.
that it's not unbelievable that medieval or even older people certainly people that made their livelihoods at the seaside would have encountered and even encountered fatally stingrays at some point or another.
No, it's not unlikely at all. And in fact, we know for a fact that ancient peoples, you know, long before the medieval Irish myths, ancient peoples knew about stingrays and they knew about the venom on their spines. And they knew some things about how these spined spears worked. In fact, stingray spine tipped spears already exist in ancient hero myths.
Ah.
Do you know this?
No, I was not aware of this, no.
So you know the story, the Greek myth of Odysseus.
Mm-hmm.
This is told in the Odyssey, for example. Odysseus and the witch Circe had a son named Telegonus. And remember, of course, the story of how Odysseus and Circe got together is that while Odysseus is on his way home, he ends up at the manor of Circe, and Circe is this witch sorceress figure who turns all of Odysseus's men into swine, but Odysseus saves them with the help of the gods, and then he ends up essentially being Circe's live-in boyfriend for a while. Meanwhile, while his wife Penelope is home being very dutiful and waiting on him, he's
right.
Like shacking up with Circe. So as usual, Odysseus is kind of a jerk. But so he's doing that. And while he's there, he apparently has a son with Circe, and this son's name is Telegonus. But of course, eventually Odysseus has to get home to his home of Ithaca, his wife Penelope, and his son Telemachus. And so here is a passage from Fraser's translation, English translation of a passage from Apollodorus. Quote, "When Telegonus learned from Circe that he was a son of Ulysses," who is also – that's another name for Odysseus – "he sailed in search of him. And having come to the island of Ithaca, he drove away some of the cattle, and when Ulysses defended them, Telegonus wounded him with the spear he had in his hands, which was barbed with the spine of a stingray, and Ulysses died of the wound. Pettit in his article also quotes a 2nd century Greek text on fishing by an author named Oppian, which tells another version of this story, and I'll read this quote as well. "While the stingray lives, a terrible and fiery weapon attends it, such, I ween, as a man trembles to hear of, and it lives when the stingray itself has perished, and preserves its unwearied strength unchanged, and not only on the living creatures which it strikes does it belch mysterious bane, but it hurts even tree and rock and wherever it comes nigh. That sting it was which his mother Circe, skilled in many drugs, gave of old to Telegonus, for his long-hilted spear, that he might array his foe's death from the sea. And he beached his ship on the island that pastured goats, and he knew not that he was harrying the flocks of his own father, and on his aged sire, who came to the rescue, even on him whom he was seeking, he brought an evil fate. There the cunning Odysseus, who had passed through countless woes of the sea in his laborious adventures, the grievous stingray slew with one blow."
Ooh.
So that's kind of combining, weirdly enough, like the Odysseus tradition and sort of the Oedipus tradition, right? Like, yeah, accidentally coming across and killing your own father.
Well, it's interesting too, to bring it back to Cuchulainn. I believe there in the part of the story there is that Cuchulainn ends up accidentally killing his own son with the guy Bolga. At one point, he does not know that it's his son, and he ends up engaging in combat with him.
Well, yeah, Pettit seems to notice some pretty strong similarities between these myths. And so I think this is one reason he has for wondering if the idea of the stingray is actually incorporated into the Guy Bulga legend. Pettit also mentions that some sources claim Circe had the stingray-tipped spear made by the Greek forge god Hephaestus out of a spine stolen from a stingray by the sea god Phorcys. Hmm. And of course, we know that the Guy Bulga was made, at least in some tellings, from the body of some kind of sea monster or sea creature.
Right. And in some tellings, the art of the Guy Bulga is instructed to Cuchulainn by a god of the sea.
But just as further evidence of what the ancients knew or thought they knew about stingray spines, why not have a look at our old friend Pliny the Elder as well?
Oh, yes.
Pettit points to this passage, quote, "But there is nothing in the world more execrable than the sting projecting above the tail of the stingray, which our people call the pastinaca. It is 5 inches long and kills trees when driven into the root." That's sort of like what Oppian said right there. Mm-hmm. It kills not just animals, but like trees and stones. I don't know how you kill a stone.
Yeah.
But Pliny continues, "and penetrates armor like a missile with the force of steel and with deadly poison." So Pettit sees really strong parallels between the myths of Cuchulainn and Telegonus, and sees some of these parallels between what was understood by the ancients about the stingray spine and the myth of the Guy Bulga. The Guy Bulga is said to come from the water. It gets thrown from under the water. It's associated with shallow water. Sometimes it's said to be made from the body or skull of some type of sea monster. And of course, it is true that stingrays can be found in the coastal waters of Ireland, and they can grow to quite a monstrous size. And like the underside of them, Pettit points out, can resemble a grinning or grimacing face.
Oh, that's true. That's certainly, if you've ever been to an aquarium, you know, if they come up to the glass, you see what looks like a face there. But the eyes are on the other side, obviously.
And crucially, one of the issues here is that a stingray spine is not like the fang of a snake or something, which once removed is just like a piece of tooth. You know, there's nothing to it. The ancients understood that a stingray spine could remain deadly for some time after the ray was dead or after it's removed from the ray. So maybe some like 48 hours afterwards. So detaching it from the ray and attaching it to a weapon wouldn't immediately render it harmless. It could still have, of course, the normal like piercing potential, but the venom as well.
Ah. Now, this is interesting because that epic battle that Cuchulainn has with Ferdiad, it supposedly rages for 3 days before they finally reach the point where Cuchulainn calls for the guy Bolga. So he couldn't, I mean, just based on this sort of 48-hour rule as like a rough guideline for utilizing a magical stingray weapon in battle, like he wouldn't be able to bring that to the field with him. Thus, he has to call on his charioteer to send it down the water to him, and then he can fetch it with his fabulous seven-toed foot and fling it up the anus of his opponent.
Yeah, so I don't know if Pettit's right about this connection. I mean, he also adduces a lot of evidence that we didn't even have time to get into. It's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff about like the minutiae of the translation of the word Bolga and how that could point to stingrays and stuff like that. But
I'll be sure to link to the entire article on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com. So anybody mm-hmm. who wants to really dive into the evidence there and risk getting stung, you'll be able to do so.
So I don't know if he's correct about this, but it's a really interesting case and another wonderful example of biomythology.
Yeah.
I love the way that myth and legend traditions present us with these little mysteries, like that they can be these little puzzle boxes because of the odd characteristics of elements within them, you know, like the idea of like the spear being thrown through the seven-toed foot from under the water mm-hmm. into the anus. And you just wonder like, okay, is this just weird just because it's weird, or does all this weirdness point to something? Is there something I'm missing?
Yeah. Or to what extent are we dealing with errors in translation, you know, things that should be notable, you know, metaphor or symbol, mm-hmm. but out of context just sounds like something just really wackadoodle looking. These are always questions one has to ask. But that being said, I feel like you can always just embrace just the raw alien nature of the myth you're presented with too, and just enjoy it on that level as well.
Yeah. Like, nothing more fun than a really impractical weapon.
Yes. Speaking of which, I have to say, as a fan, a longtime fan of the Mortal Kombat games, you know, they put one.
Oh, did
out.
Somebody have a guy Bolga in there?
No, but they should. Like, one of the things is you have in these games, especially today, increasingly overly complicated fatalities mm-hmm. where, you know, one fighter finishes off the other one by doing something just ridiculous, you know, like not only slicing off their head, but then slicing the head in half, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But really, when you look at the story of the guy Bolga, they've got nothing, you know? Like the Irish mythology has all the Mortal Kombat you need.
Yeah. I'd like to see Raiden versus Cuchulainn.
Yeah, they could put him in there, make him a downloadable character.
Well, wait, they have started crossing genres, haven't they? I think I don't play the Mortal Kombat games anymore, but I feel like I saw that they've got like aliens and Jason Voorhees and stuff in them.
Oh yeah,
now.
They've definitely brought in characters from other franchises.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've brought in I don't know if they brought in any additional mythological figures. They should. I mean, they already play with a little bit of that. So. Now, one additional question I had based on all of this is, all right, with the guy Bolga, you have a kind of impractical weapon that is also sure fire. Like, it is going to end the fight if you ever actually pull it out. Mm-hmm. But yet, Cuchulainn will wait 3 days to actually do it.
Right.
Do we have other examples in our fiction and other myths where you have this sure shot weapon that for some reason your heroes never actually produce until the last minute?
I feel like that happens a lot, but I'm struggling to think of an example right now.
The only one that really came to mind recently was in the original Pacific Rim film.
Oh yeah,
like the big robots, the what are they called? The Jaegers. They're beat down. They're on the point of being defeated by the giant kaiju monsters, mm-hmm. and then only then do they start using these big swords that pop out of their limbs
uh-huh.
and just completely decimate the creatures that they're battling.
Oh, I know an example. You remember the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Oh yeah,
how like they would have to keep when they faced a more powerful monster, they'd have to keep like upgrading to like the next level of robots.
Yes.
And you always wondered, like, why don't they just go to the top level of robots every time so they instantly defeat their opponent no matter what?
Yeah, why isn't that your first move to go and do that?
Exactly.
Instead of destroying half a city battling the monster, for sure, yeah. Or, for instance, Voltron is another example. Like, I feel like they would try and battle whatever the Robeast or the threat of the week happened to be with just the lions. And then they're like, I guess we need to form Voltron to actually deal with this scenario. Just go ahead and form Voltron.
That's exactly the same thing as the Power Rangers. Yeah. First they'd fight it hand to hand, and then it would get big. Magic wand, make my monster grow. It'd get big, and then they'd form a bigger robot. And then they'd fight it, and then it would get bigger again or something, and then they'd have to do another thing. They'd have to go to the final robot level.
Well, I guess maybe in all of this, there is a certain amount of martial arts storytelling. I am reminded in professional wrestling, for instance, especially in the Japanese varieties, there'll be a super finisher that an individual has, a move that they rarely bust out because it's too dangerous. But if the match is goes on long enough, and their other finishers haven't worked, then they will turn to something like the Gonzo Bomb, something that is the kind of the equivalent of the Guy Bolga.
What is the Gonzo Bomb?
It's this guy named Kawada would use it. It's like a power bomb where he just drops you right on your neck. Brutal move. He only busted it out a few times, but it was kind of like his super move, his super form that he would assume. And so I guess it makes sense from a storytelling point of view. If you're telling the story of epic, mythic combatants going at each other, that there would be this one move beyond that they might turn to. And in the case of the Guy Bolga, it's not a pleasant weapon. It's a treacherous weapon. It's kind of like your hero cheating a little bit at the very end out of desperation.
Well, they had to cheat to defeat him in the end, too.
That's true. So
they had to trick him. Yeah. Though I guess he did that. I guess it's the opposite order. But
still, yeah. Some treachery ends up being employed even on the mythic battlefield.
This is the new version of the Han shot first t-shirt. It's Kuellen cheated first.
Oh, man. Yeah, print it. I'd wear it. Speaking of, we do have a t-shirt store.
Can we get those made?
I would love to see it. Maybe it will be there soon. For the time being, though, we have all sorts of fun, squirrel-related and great basilisk-related and black hole-related designs, as well as just, what you might expect, logo-based designs as well. You can find that if you go to our mothership, stufftoblowyourmind.com. There is a link at the top for our store. It's our TeePublic store. Check that out. It's a fun way to support the show. But the best way to support the show is to simply rate and review us wherever you have the power to do so, wherever you get this podcast. Also, be sure to check out our other show, Invention. That's already out there. I think we're, about a dozen episodes in? Each episode, a new life-changing, world-altering invention.
Always life-changing and world-altering. Sometimes just weird and small and interesting.
That's true. But, it ultimately changes the shape of life in some way or another. Even things that didn't quite come to being, like the death ray.
Yeah. Can't disagree with you there. So definitely check out Invention. If you like this show, we're pretty sure you'll like that show, too. Anyway, big thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producers, Alex Williams and Tari Harrison. If you would like to get in touch with us directly with feedback about this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.